We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
You know, we've come through the fires, you know, to the other side together as one brotherhood. We're battle ready. I think that's important when you get to this time of year, because this week will be another battle.
Dan Quinn and our Atlanta Falcons battle ready, but are they ready for Todd Gurley, Rick Kamla, John Michaels? We are at the College Football Hall of Fame, and we're going to be here tomorrow as well. Randy Mack will be in for John. John's going to be in L.A., flies out later today with the Falconians to La La for the game Saturday night with the Rams. You'll hear it here on The Game. Monday, we're going to be at Stats, and Monday's going to be an all-day party. The whole weekend's going to be a party, but Monday, definitely get down to Stats. Hang out with your boys. Take pictures. We'll clown around with you. I can virtually promise that Brandon from Lindale, our boy, will be at Stats. You know, right down here. I mean, it's just right down the street from the College Football Hall of Fame, and obviously right down the street from Mercedes-Benz Stadium. Now, John, you asked the question, can our Falcons survive a monster game from Todd Gurley? Mm-hmm. The answer is very definitively no, because a monster game from Todd Gurley is three touchdowns, 190 yards, stuff like that. I don't see us scoring 27, 31, 34. I see us scoring 20, 23. I haven't totally crunched the numbers on it yet, but that's where we've been living all year, and I don't anticipate us going out to L.A. and just suddenly becoming this offensive juggernaut. I certainly hope it happens, but no, I believe that if Todd Gurley tilts the machine, that'll probably be a Rams blowout. We have to at least contain him. What says you?
I think you have to keep him out of the end zone. I think you can survive 200 yards total. Like, he's got 130 on the ground. He's got 70 receiving. As long as everybody else doesn't get off.
How many TDs does he have?
Two. Give him two. You can survive that.
I mean, barely, because you're probably going to get at least one from Woods or Kupp or something from Goff. So then that's three TDs. So now the Rams are in the 20s. And you know that we struggle to get into the 20. Once we get there, we usually win. But I do like us to get to the 20s against the Rams. I just don't like us to get way into the 20s against the Rams.
I think we're going to need about 27 to win.
27, I feel like, is a winning number. I just don't know if we're going to get there.
Rams are 12th in the NFL giving up points, little over 20 points a game. Now, mind you, look at the schedule that the Rams have played. They haven't exactly played a murderer's row. They're 19th in the NFL giving up yardage defensively. The Falcons are top 10 in both of the categories that I just mentioned. We talked yesterday. The Rams cannot stop the run or haven't stopped the run particularly well all season long. They're in the 30s. They give up 4.7 yards a carry. If the Falcons run the ball for 4.7 yards a carry, they're going to get into the 20s because that means the run's going to be setting up the pass. I know the Rams have a bunch of interceptions. We talked about that yesterday. But if all of a sudden they've got to add extra assets to the box to try to slow down the Falcons' run of the football, good luck with slowing down the Falcons throwing the ball.
We've been talking with you all about dogs in Bama. We're going to talk with you now about our Falcons a couple of days out from the Rams game Saturday night, 404-741-0929. John is asking the question, can we survive a monster game from Gurley? I say we can't because our offense isn't explosive enough this year. But also let's talk about this. How do you stop Todd Gurley? Who John and I both agree is the MVP of the National Football League. Dave Archer said yesterday that he's on board with that as well. Here's how you stop it. You have to tackle Todd Gurley, obviously, but how do you tackle Todd Gurley? Well, we have two of the top tacklers in all of football. Deion Jones, 138 tackles. That is second most in the league. Scobert of Cleveland, Martinez of Green Bay, and Brown of Buffalo were a buck 44. Kirksey of Cleveland and Jones of Atlanta at 138. Second most tackles in football. Now, let's go down a little bit, John. 13th on the tackle list is Keanu Neal at 116. Keanu Neal had the second most tackles among safeties in the NFL. The only guy that had more was Jones of Miami. Keanu Neal, John, had more tackles than Kiko Alonso of Miami, Eric Kendricks of Minnesota, K.J. Wright of Seattle. Okay, that puts it into perspective. Kendricks and Alonso and K.J. Wright are three of the premier tacklers in the National Football League. And Keanu Neal had more tackles than they did. That's how you stop or contain Todd Gurley. Deion Jones and Keanu Neal are top tacklers. How many times do they meet at the ball both simultaneously?
A lot.
You got to gang tackle Gurley. And also, John, I'm going to throw Devondre Campbell into the
mix.
His ability in space with coverage and tracking guys, Devondre is going to be a big key in that game.
Remember, he was a guy that a year ago for like four or five games, we were like, man, Devondre is kind of lost. Devondre is a rock now, and he is a guy that you absolutely can depend on. Suddenly, Falcons don't give up 100-yard games to tight ends. You know, you think about back in 2012, and I know it's a while ago, but it used to just be, it didn't matter, whatever ham and egg tight end was out there, he was going to go five catches for 90 yards and a score. And if you were Jimmy Graham or one of the elite guys, you were going for 140, 150 yards. Now, all of a sudden, teams' tight ends just don't go out and go crazy for us. Even guys like Gronk, and I know it was different, but they're just not wide open, crazy wide open. So that also goes into it with the running backs as well. We used to have times where running backs just killed this team receiving the football. Devondre's going to be a huge guy watching Todd Gurley out of the backfield. What they've done with Keanu Neal is sometimes they'll even walk him up on a tight end. If a tight end's flexed out and Keanu will go man, or if teams do like the Falcons do and they send their running back all the way outside in a four or five receiver set, Keanu will walk up and play jam coverage on him. So Keanu and Devondre, to your point, are going to be huge in this game.
They really are. And, you know, as you're talking about and breaking down the defense, I kind of go back to Sunday a little bit in listening to Dave Archer and Wes Durham. And Arch really – and the thing I love about Arch, he is on the Falcons radio network, yet he is objectively and fairly critical of Atlanta Falcons. And you mentioned it earlier this week, and we saw it play out. Before the touchdown to Funchess, Brian Poole had a major breakdown. I think it was the catch by Burson there inside the 10 to set him up. But Dave Archer on the broadcast was talking about what a bad mental error that was by Brian Poole. Mm-hmm. And John, correct me if I'm wrong here, but it seems like Brian Poole has regressed a little bit based on how spectacular he was last year. There have been some breakdowns from Poole. Now, he did have the touchdown on Golden Tate that won us that football game early in the season with the 10-second run-up. But we need Brian Poole to pick it up a little bit.
He's been all right, but that was a bad misstep, and that was one where down in distance, I don't know if for a brief second he lost where he was. What he did, there was a guy underneath him, and he jumped that guy. Didn't need to. Continue to get depth on 3rd and 23. Make Cam Newton check it down and do what Dan Quinn's taught these guys to do. Rally to the football and make a tackle. If Carolina catches the ball at 13 yards, you're not getting away from 7 or 8 defensive backs that are all coming after the football. So, yeah, Brian's going to have to play well. And Cooper Kupp, the kid can play. Brian Poole's probably going to spend a lot of time in the slot chasing him around the field. He's become the safety blanket for Jared Goff.
I would imagine. And one guy that I don't fear in this football game, we're breaking down Falcons and Rams here live from the College Football Hall of Fame. We'll take a call or two as well. How do you stop or contain Gurley, and can our birds win if Gurley goes off? 404-741-0929. In terms of John, Sammy Watkins has been about 1/100th the player I thought he would be in the NFL coming out of Clemson. He is not a guy that I really fear in this football game.
At all.
Goff rarely targets him. The reason I'm going here is the Cooper Kupp thing. You're like, Cooper Kupp, he's, you know, the gritty gutty white guy, you know, rookie in the league and all this. Can he really hurt me? Yes, he can. He's Welker-ish. He's very quick. He gets open. He's got a really, John, mature understanding of the pockets and zones and how to get open and just sit down and wait for Goff to hit him. But the number one receiver on this team is Robert Woods. Robert Woods, who was busty up in Buffalo, of course, terrific career at USC. He is now the money man for Jared Goff. He is their true number one receiver. Those two guys concern me as well. This is a nice balanced offense that the Rams have.
Looking at the game log for Todd Gurley, boy, it's pretty telling. The losses, he's been at least moderately contained. They lost against Washington early in the year. 16 for 88 with a touchdown, 3 receptions, 48 yards, and a touchdown. They lose 27-20.
See, that's not a monster game. Our Falcons could withstand that.
Seattle, they lose 16-10. They were bad that game. He was 14 carries, 43 yards.
Damn.
He only had 2 catches for 7 yards.
Wow.
That's not going to get it done. The other loss, Minnesota, 15 carries, 37 yards, 3 catches, 19 yards. He did have 1 touchdown.
You remember the flow of that game? First drive of the game, L.A. goes down, bang, hits him with a touchdown, and did not score again in that football game. That was crazy.
They lose to Philly 43-35. Gurley had a nice game there, 13 for 96, 2 scores, 3 catches, 39 yards. So he even in their wins, though, he's only had a couple of really monster games. Dallas, 23 for a buck 21, 7 catches, 94 yards, but he only got in the end zone once. Seattle in the blowout, he was 21 for a buck 52, 3 scores, 3 for 28 and a touchdown receiver. That we can't survive. That's 4 scores.
So, John, yesterday we were talking about, you know, the middies, our NFL awards, and we condensed it a little bit. One of the sort of, I don't know, superfluous awards I had was fantasy MVP, not league MVP, MVP, but fantasy MVP. And I think Todd Gurley is both.
Yeah.
We both agree that he's the league MVP. But in terms of fantasy MVP, how about these last 3 games in the fantasy playoffs? They're playing Philly. He goes, you said 13 for 96, 2 touchdowns. Okay, that'll work. The next week he has 3-4 combined touchdowns. And then in week 16, he has 2 touchdowns. So what is that, John? 8 touchdowns in the last 3 games?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. So he was the
actually
key.
9 because, because he had 6. Or 8. I'm sorry. You're right.
So
I missed
8 touchdowns in 3 games, weeks 14, 15, and 16 when the fantasy money was on the line.
If you had him in the finals.
That's crazy.
He had 118 yards rushing, 158 yards receiving, and 2 touchdowns. That's championship week.
And which team did he give all those goodies to?
Preacher Man took his headphones off because he gave them to the Titans.
The Preacher Man's. Todd Gurley, he is still running on a 90-yard touchdown against your Titans. My God, the open space and the daylight that he had in that game. It's not on.
It's probably better that your mic's not on right now. There was filth, floor, and filth coming out of Paul's mouth.
But anyway, he's a spectacular player, and we're all happy for him. Obviously, you know, a UGA kid with the torn ACL. Are you kidding me, dude? Coming off of a 4-game suspension that was one of the most garbagey suspensions in NCAA history, and then your first game should not have been on the field, John. And I called out Mark Richt on this. The game is over, and you have Gurley, you know, coming off a 4-week layoff in the fourth quarter out there, and he pops his ACL. So I'm really happy for Todd Gurley. What do you think right now? One of the top 5 players in all the NFL?
Absolutely.
Top 10 at least. It'll be interesting where he's at in the NFL Network top 100 next year.
Probably top 10. He's been the best running back of the league this year.
Got to be top 10.
I mean, think about it. He's been the best running back in the league this year.
Here's kind of a quirky stat. Rick and John here breaking down the Rams and Falcons. What do you think was the number of the most touchdown catches in the NFL?
13.
Boom.
Was that what it was?
Yes. Nuke Hopkins of the Houston Texans with 13 touchdown grabs. A very low number to lead the league. Usually it's Gronk with 17 or a wide receiver has that year and they have 17, 15, 18, 13. That's it. Todd Gurley, by far the leading touchdown man in the NFL
with 19.
By far the leader.
And that's where the Falcons got to find a way, put an extra resource on him and find a way to take him. Make Cooper Kupp beat you.
Yeah.
Make Robert Woods beat you. Make your guy Higbee beat you.
He's pretty good.
He is, but if the ball goes in hands and not Todd Gurley, it's a win. I always talked about that back when the Saints used to be, you know, a pass-happy team. I would tell Arch and Wes, every time that they turn and hand it to Tim Hightower or whatever other cockamamie running back they had back there, that was a win because it was one less play that Drew Brees was dropping back throwing the ball. Every time it's in Jared Goff's hands, and I know Goff's had a really good year, and I'm not knocking him. Every time it's in Goff's hands, I feel like it's a win for the Falcons. I want to ask you this, Rick. Last week, 3 interceptions. Do you feel like finally the turnover flood will hit?
I don't.
No?
I don't.
You just thought it was Cam being Cam?
Yeah, that was a Cam Malin game. I don't. It was nice, John. It's encouraging. Hopefully it is trend-setting. But I can't – you know, it's if they're making spectacular plays on these interceptions, and that's one thing, right? But Cam Newton just had one of those I don't feel like playing today games, so I need to see more. I want to ask you on a lifestyle tip. Mm-hmm. You're flying to one of my favorite cities – in the world later on today. You're flying to L.A.
Right.
I always have stuff lined up. I always try to get to the beach, go down to Manhattan Beach or Hermosa Beach or something like that and just chill with all the hippies. You got the water. You got the beautiful sunshine. That's what I do when I go to L.A. What do you do? What are you doing tonight? What are you doing tomorrow night?
I have no idea. The last time we were out there a year ago, we stayed on Santa Monica. So we were right there next to the pier. We actually went fishing, which was fun, watching Bo try to hook a seal because they had the little sea lions out there swimming and they just wanted your bait. But that was fun. Mike Thomas hooked something. I'm not sure if it was like buried treasure or a surfer, but he hooked something.
Was it the Oh, God, the horror movie. Well, I Know What You Did Last Summer.
Yeah.
Was it the guy, the
guy with the trench coat?
Yeah, I mean, it's what was that? It's like a rain jacket. Like
the slicker.
Rain jacket,
the slicker on.
Did he hook that guy?
He may have. He hooked something, and he didn't reel it in, and he lost his bait. But we were there last time. I've heard this time, and I haven't really looked at the full itinerary, but we're staying right near LAX. We're, like, right by the airport. So I don't know logistically what there is to do.
You might be able to go to the Lakers practice facility. I believe it's still in El Segundo, which I believe is still by the airport.
Yeah, I'm good.
I'm just kidding.
I lost my wallet once in El Segundo.
That's a song, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
There you go. I'm seeing if I can pull that one over the eyes.
You almost got me with that one. But
Sean Thompson will like that reference.
And you're not a sushi guy.
No.
See, I would tell you,
sushi's
disgusting. They have some of the most awesome sushi places in the world out there in L.A., but you're not up for that.
Well, I always, you know, the big fight we always get into, Bo and I and Arch, Bo's allergic, I believe, to shellfish, so he doesn't like to go to the seafoody spots.
Yeah.
I want to go eat crab with shrimp with crab wrapped in lobster.
I'm with you, but does he know that most high-end seafood places have hamburgers? You know, it's on the kid menu, and maybe you could get him a hamburger off the kid menu as you go.
Well, the problem is when you go to a high-end...
The preacher man liked that one.
When you go to a high-end seafood place, the hamburger is $74, and, hey, man, I don't want to pay that, and I don't blame him. I'd rather go to a bar, so I have no idea what we're doing.
The best hamburgers in the world are at steakhouses.
Well, you know where we're going?
You know what I'm saying? Like, they put a lot of love into those hamburgers.
Well, I could tell you what burger we're going for. In and out. I'll go there at least twice in 3 days.
You gonna holler at Zach Klein, who's who's spending a fortnight in Southern California?
The only problem is Zach dresses way nicer than I do. I've got, again, slack-ish pants. I've got a University of Miami T-shirt. I've got a Falcons in Brotherhood T-shirt, and I've got a Karate Kid T-shirt. There's my wardrobe for the weekend.
Really, that's it?
That's it.
Okay. Have you checked the weather out in L.A.?
What? 71, and it low is like mid-50s.
We hate you. Are you kidding me?
Yeah.
Are you kidding me?
I do have this if it gets a little chilly.
Oh, a little chilly.
And I brought a hoodie just in case. The problem is the hoodie's red. The hoodie's red, and I don't know what neighborhood we're staying in. So I don't know if I want to wear a red hoodie anywhere in Los Angeles.
Yeah, just watch when you're taking a selfie with somebody. Like, you may be flashing a gang sign, and you just don't know.
I don't want to get shot. That's all I don't. I just want to keep it moving. Hey, we'll take a break. We'll come back. NFL Bounce coming up next. We're live here at the College Football Hall of Fame. Some teams making some coaching changes. Let's just say Aaron Rodgers couldn't save some guys' jobs. That's all coming up next on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game and 92.9thegame.com.
Alrighty then, we are back here at the College Football Hall of Fame. Rick and John, we are supported by Paul Bible. The Preacher Man is here. Mark Owens back in our Kia Studios. And we have my main man, the corporate thug himself, Eric Davis, on funky drums back here. So, John, you mentioned Green Bay going scorched earth. I want to get to that in a second. But we have huge news from the Falcons practice field.
Uh-oh.
Devontae Freeman, it's good. Devontae Freeman, after a limited session yesterday, is back at practice today. And I have not seen full practice, but the report that I just read intimated that he's doing more work today than he did yesterday, and of course he did not practice on Tuesday. So that's good news, man. Devontae Freeman trending in the right direction for the game.
That's gigantic news. We were excited earlier in the program when we saw that he was at minimum limited. If he's going full participant today, that means he will be a full participant on Saturday night. I'm not sure what their schedule will be tomorrow. We obviously will travel today. I'm assuming they will have some sort of practice. It may just be a walkthrough. A lot of times when we've been on the road for multiple days, what they've done is taken the whole group. They go to a high school or a small college. They'll do a practice or a walkthrough in that facility, and then they come back and obviously get ready for the game the next day. Typically on a Saturday for a Sunday game, the team does an early day walkthrough, and then obviously if it's travel, they go travel afterwards. If they're on the road, then they just go back to the hotel. So I'm assuming tomorrow they'll have some type of walkthrough.
Well, hopefully they're all good boys on Friday night and take care of themselves, get the rest during the dark hours, as Kirby Smart talks about. And John, what Green Bay has done here, they have whacked everybody. It is like it's the end of Godfather 2 when the whole darn crew gets whacked. Dom Capers, defensive coordinator, gone. Linebacker coach Scott McCurley, gone. D-line coach Mike Travac, gone. Edgar Bennett, offensive coordinator.
Not Edgar Bennett.
Gone. Yeah, he used to pay the bills for me in fantasy football. Quarterbacks coach Alex Van Pelt, gone. GM, gone.
Wait. Their QB coach was Alex Van Pelt, who used to be the crap quarterback at Pitt.
I'm glad you went there, John, because Alex Van Pelt, if memory serves, had a very fledgling NFL career.
He did.
After a very fledgling college career. One of the softest armed quarterbacks I've ever seen. And correct me if I'm wrong, he was pudgy too, right?
Yeah, he had a little pudge.
A little pudgy. A little tavern look to him, a little tavern league look
to him.
He was built
like me.
So here's the thing. What in the hell can Alex Van Pelt teach Aaron Rodgers about the art of quarterbacking?
Are you
kidding me? Anyway, Mike McCarthy keeping his job, but his staff has been gutted.
Mm-hmm.
Crazy.
Yeah. Well, the defensive side, and my buddy Carnell's a giant Packers fan. Packers fans.
My condolences on that.
They have been.
I used to like Carnell.
They have been crazy. He's from Wisconsin. You can't hold that
against. Is he from Wisconsin?
Born and raised in Milwaukee.
I thought he was a South Florida dude.
No, he's born and raised in Milwaukee.
All right, he gets a pass.
You know how he ended up a Canes fan?
If he's from stupid Wisconsin, I guess he's grandfathered in.
He was like, dude, we don't watch college football up here. When I first met him, I met him 18, 19 years ago, and Wisconsin wasn't as good as they are now. So I took him to a Miami FSU game. He was like, dude, this is awesome.
Oh, yeah.
And he adopted the Canes.
I love it. He's right. College football is not a big deal up north. It's just not. We talked about it. Up in the Northeast.
Yeah.
Are they talking about Alabama and Georgia right now?
No.
Hell no.
They're worrying about baseball. It's spring training.
And they're worried about, like, who's going to be the next Giants coach and all that
Knicks
kind of
and
stuff.
All that
stuff.
Yeah. But getting back to the point on the Packers, Packers fans have been wanting Dom Capers and that staff blown out for a couple of years. They feel that's a lot of the reasons that they haven't been able to advance further than they have, is that his system was antiquated, it was old, they weren't getting pressure when they needed it, they couldn't cover anybody. Hey, part of it's the fact they don't have a ton of talent on the defensive side of the ball, more than Dom Capers, but they're making all those changes. That lets you know that Mike McCarthy, the leash is getting shorter and shorter on him as well.
Great point. And also, in terms of, It also kind of is an indicator that Green Bay wanted to move on from some of these coaches but couldn't because the team was winning. And it's tough to fire guys when you're winning. Now, the Falcons kind of sort of did, right? Firing Richard Lewis and I believe somebody else.
Richard Smith.
Richard Smith.
Brian Cox.
My bad. And Brian Cox. Yeah, they got let go after losing the Super Bowl. But this lets me know that Green Bay has been kind of looking at Dom Capers like this isn't good enough. But they've been hanging in there, the loyalty thing, and the fact that, you know, last year they were in the NFC Championship game. So they had that bit of justification. But you're right. And so here's the other thing with this. And it is a pet peeve of mine. That one lousy year based on an injury to your best player causes you to gut the whole thing and completely hit the panic button. And maybe it's the right move for Green Bay, but typically it's not. Typically, like Florida State, for example, I still think Jimbo Fisher should be the coach of the Seminoles. I know a lot of people disagree with that.
I think that's a Jimbo issue. That wasn't an FSU issue.
It's a little bit of both. But to me, FSU was like, okay, we have bottomed out this year. This year sucks. This year is crap. And so let's make some changes around here. Whereas the graphic on Jimbo Fisher going into the first game against Nick Saban in Alabama said, since Jimbo Fisher took over for Florida State, he has the number one winning percentage in all of college football. That was the stat. And so you're going to let one lousy year let go of that guy? And we've documented it. I think Jimbo should still be their coach. But you're right. Maybe Jimbo wanted out.
How do you feel about this? You think John Gruden's actually going to take the – we haven't talked about this.
I do.
You think he's going to take the Raiders job?
We have not talked about this enough. I do. I think where there's smoke, there's fire. He's been there. And I feel like there is more smoke involving Gruden getting back into coaching now than I believe there ever has been since he's been the guy on Monday Night Football. I really feel like this is coming to a boil right now. I don't know the status of his kids, John. Like if his youngest kid is like graduating high school or something, I don't know that because I know that he did want to be more present with family. That's one of the reasons he got out of coaching. But I think the time is right. I think the team is right. Think about what he's taken over. Oakland is still a rich team with talent.
Absolutely.
And they have $19 million in cap space. Mm-hmm. This is a team that won, I believe, 12 games last year. Carr goes out. They lose their play. But, I mean, if he gets this job, he's taken over a really talented team with a rock star quarterback. And you know Gruden ain't taking a job on a team that doesn't have a quarterback.
Yeah, he's had to coach with Brad Johnson before. I don't think he wants – and granted, Brad Johnson won him a Super Bowl. I don't think he wants to go back into coaching for that. There was also rumors he's going to get like an owner's stake in the team or some kind of share of the new the Las Vegas Raiders.
Man, I forgot about that.
Oh, yeah. That's going to be awesome.
Dude, I'd completely forgotten about
it. So by the way,
they're Oakland next year and then Las Vegas,
I think so,
right?
And they're still building the stadium or broken ground. There's also something Wynn Hotel – is putting together like this monster billion-dollar water park out there.
Nice.
Like water park, hotel, and casino. I saw something online with that yesterday. And
sweet.
I said, yeah, a couple of years, I'll have to get back to Vegas.
They're going to kill with that because that entity does not exist right now. I don't believe there's a big kick-ass water park out in Vegas right now.
I don't think there is.
Mark Owens.
Well,
back
well, here's the thing. There is. It's called the MGM Pool. The MGM Grand Pool is monstrous.
How nice is that?
No, there is not a specific water park. There are plans to make one. They used to have one years ago called Wet n Wild. It is no longer there. It is an empty lot with a half building of a casino that was never finished. But there are plans to build another one.
Are you kidding? I mean, this guy right here, you're like on the Chamber of Commerce for Las Vegas. Dude, Mark, are you secretly the assistant to the mayor of Las Vegas, Nevada?
You know,
is that your side gig?
I've given them enough money over the years. I should probably get a W-2 form, maybe get some taxes back.
I love it, man. All right, so, John, let's talk about these college kids declaring for the draft.
Yeah.
Yesterday, Sam Darnold and Josh Rosen both declared. I think it's just kind of cool that they declared on the same day. I also read yesterday Saquon Barkley is joining up with Jay-Z and Roc Nation. They are going to make a ton of money together. But let's talk quarterbacks, dude. Mm-hmm. You are – I don't even know if it's the Cleveland Browns. Let's say you're the Browns, okay? Mm-hmm. The Browns obviously need a QB. Who are you taking?
I'm taking Lamar Jackson. Cleveland's not going to take Lamar Jackson. They're going to probably take Rosen or Darnold. Here's the thing. Rosen, and I've spoken with some people that were at games where he was at, Rosen throws a better ball, has a stronger arm than Sam Darnold. This is according to people that are at games. But I've heard that Josh Rosen's a bad guy. Like, that's kind of the knock that you're going to hear between now and the time he gets drafted. He's not a great teammate. Again, this is stuff that I've read about him. He's kind of a jerk. He's kind of aloof. He's all of those things. Do you want to start a franchise, or do you want to be Cleveland, who hasn't had a quarterback, you know, since Brian Sipe and Bernie Kosar were there in the 80s and the 90s? Do you want to go with a guy that might alienate teammates immediately, or do you want to go with a guy that has all the intangibles you want? He's a guy's guy. He's Sam Darnold. Everybody wants to rally around him. But he might not be as good of a quarterback. Which route do you go with that?
Well, I definitely do not go Josh Rosen to Cleveland. I would not be mad at all if the second most electric guy in this draft, Lamar Jackson, was tabbed by Cleveland. But here's my thing with Rosen, and I agree with everything you said, and you can witness that a little bit in his play. He's got some Jay Cutler in him, okay? He makes business decisions. He makes brain fart throws that you're like, dude, you're so talented. How did you just let that happen?
Right.
Go back and look at the Memphis game, you all. He had two of the worst interceptions in all of college football in that football game, including a pick six on a little left side throw that was just like, Rosen, you suck. What the heck? So he's incredibly talented throwing the football. Period. I think it ends with that, John.
Yeah.
He's not athletic. He's not going to be able to make random plays. You can't run read option with him. I don't believe he's going to be able to take a hit as a rookie. There's lots of things I don't like about Josh Rosen. His ability to spin the ball is the best of any quarterback coming out. Let's give him that. There's so much more to the quarterback position, John. I think Sam Darnold is the best blend of all of it.
Mm-hmm.
He's got the arm. He's got the bod. He's got the pedigree. He's got the ability, like Andrew Luck, to make plays with his feet, to get a first down on third and three, to do some of the stuff Matt Ryan's doing right now. He's not going to wow you with his feet, but he's going to be effective with his feet.
Sure.
Whereas Lamar Jackson, John, he's so talented that he gets lazy with mechanics. Mm-hmm. You see it with Cam Newton a little bit. In that game against Mississippi State where he had three or four interceptions or whatever it was, he just gets comfortable and he gets lazy with mechanics and he forgets to step into it, John, and rip that ball. And when he does, it's a beautiful throw. When he kind of half butts it and is a little lazy about his mechanics, the ball will come out high and it will drift and it will be intercepted. But Lamar Jackson, as I said, Barkley's the most electrifying player. Freakish, all that kind of stuff. Lamar Jackson's number two on the freak scale.
A couple other guys that have already declared. Christian Kirk from Texas A&M, he's gone. Big loss for Jimbo Fisher taking over the Aggie program this year. No surprise, Darius. Geis gone to the NFL. Your boy Arden Key cost me 20, but I won the 20 back with Oklahoma.
You did. Yeah, Arden Key made that decision a year ago to go to the NFL.
Shocking. He has decided to go pro. Derwin James, who equally made that decision a year ago, he's gone to the draft. This is a monster draft that you start to look at this year with guys turning pro. It's going to change the landscape of college football, but I think if you're at the top of the draft, there's a lot of really good names out there that can help out your football team.
Well, you think about the running backs. Where does Kerryon Johnson go? And if you get Kerryon Johnson in the second round, maybe he falls to the third round. I can't see that really happening. But Kerryon Johnson's a stud. Like Sony Michel. Where does Sony Michel go in the NFL draft?
Yeah.
Third round? Fourth round? If you take Sony Michel in the fourth round, it's not unlike the Falcons getting Devontae Freeman in the fourth round.
Right.
Think about the quarterbacks. You got the big four, Rosen, Darnold, Jackson, Mayfield. Then you got Josh Allen and Mason Rudolph. And several other guys. There's even some guys that we haven't heard of, John. The Toledo quarterbacks and the Ohio quarterbacks.
Logan Woodside.
Shoot up draft charts. This is an incredibly rich draft in terms of offensive talent.
It is, and for a lot of these teams that are offensively challenged, they want to get that done. Make sure you join 92.9 The Game this Monday before the game at Stats, right down the street from where we're at now, for the 92.9 The Game National Championship pregame live broadcast brought to you by Bud Light. Pregame with Rick and I from 10 to 2, and then Dukes and Bell from 2 to 6. Plus, we'll have a special college football game time from 6 to 8, and you can register to win and take home an autographed framed Herschel Walker jersey. I thought I put that in my trunk the other day.
Unsuccessfully.
Must have forgot. We'll do From the Bible coming up next with the Preacher Man.
All right, I don't know if this is fair or foul, but a IG model has asked for help on social media to pay her bills and didn't quite get the response she was looking for.
That's all coming up next from the Bible. Sports Radio 92.9 The Game live here at the College Football Hall of Fame.
Sports Radio 92.
All right, we got From the Bible right now live from the College Football Hall of Fame. We're going to be here tomorrow as well, and we'll be at Stats on Monday getting the pregame going for the national championship game. And coming up next, we're going to get into discussion with y'all, and we want you to call in just a moment here. In terms of, is the national championship game Monday night the biggest sports
Ooh.
Event in Atlanta history? There's no right or wrong answer to this. You could say Olympics or whatever, but we're going to have that discussion because, very simply, this is arguably the biggest sporting event in Atlanta history,
mm-hmm.
The national championship game Monday night. So we're going to chop that up in our next hour. But right now, Johnny Boy, it is the Preacher Man's time to shine.
All right, as we know, From the Bible is brought to you by Dunn Waterproofing and Restoration. Get it done with Dunn. Call 770-4-FLOOD. That's Dunn Waterproofing. Now, Johnny brought this to my attention earlier during the show. Apparently, there's an IG model asking for a little financial assistance on social media. Her name is Danielle Victor. Apparently, she tweeted out, "I'm exactly $4,859 short on my bills, including rent. That's $1,700. If anyone is following me who loves me, my PayPal account is blah, 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 blah. I'm not going to give that out." And she's like, "Help. Greatly needed." But anyway, so there's been several people, and John has a lot of these replies that he's been looking at, where people have just, you know, come back at her and given her
now,
suggestions.
Time out 1 second.
Mm-hmm.
So for me and everybody listening, we need to know who the lady is.
Daniela Victor.
Daniela
Victor.
Daniela Victor. You did say that.
I did.
And I heard it. And I
just didn't pay attention.
It went in one ear and out
the other.
So Daniela Victor.
I noticed some of the high school kids over here are now listening going, "Daniela Victor." Write that one down.
They're all pulling out their phones.
So continue, please,
IG
sir.
Model. Those two were smiling. He was like, "Yeah, I like that." So go ahead, Paul.
So, and this comes from Black Sports Online. And anyway, basically, it's how long do you somebody tweeted a reply better. Honey B says, "How long you knew you had bills to pay?" She said she hasn't worked in 5 months. "What you been doing? Girl, get a job and become a working class member like the rest of America."
Yeah, that was
one. That was a nice one.
That was one of the nice ones. Some of them I cannot read, especially with families in here. We don't want to offend anybody. We've been known to do that before on this show. So, yeah, we've had to be called in the corner office. Well, yeah, exactly. But I will read some of the funny ones. So, again, she said she had $10 to her name, Rick, Miss Victor. It says she has not worked in five months, as Paul just mentioned.
Said she's been sick.
She's been sick.
Hasn't been able to get a TV gig.
Yeah. Guess what? I can't get a TV gig, and I've been in the entertainment business now for 15 years. So TV gigs don't just roll out no matter what you look like. Here's one that was sent to her from Shanty Simone or Chantel Simone. "Hey, girl, I know this is funny and kind of weird, but I saw your post. You can actually sell dirty underwear on PantyDeal.com. A friend of mine does it. Or SugarDaddyForMe.com is another site that you don't actually have to meet the sugar daddies in most situations. Just send pictures. I've had friends who have done both. Just a few ideas if you really need them." So let's just say Miss Victor was not so kind in her responses to the advice of how to come up with the $4,700. She says this. So my life has really come down to getting DMs like this. Ladies, I would never blank for money, and I darn sure wouldn't sell my just-went-to-the-gym crusted over panties.
But she is in a desperate situation. She's rather hot.
Yeah.
She is, I would probably go about a 9.
Wow, you went high.
Yeah, that's... I'm trying to be generous. I'm trying to get her paid, man. Damn. But 8 or 9.
Well, you got a deep pocket. You can help her out.
I'm happily married, man. I ain't getting involved in all this stuff.
She's a 7 and a hook.
By the way, the XXO Danielle, is that is she telling us that
that's hugs and kisses?
She's not saying that she's on a
no, because she just said in
on
her
a
reply,
double X rated site.
Well, she just said in her reply she's not putting
out. Oh, wait a second.
Well, then she ain't getting that money.
Here,
preacher man.
The plot just thickens to a response I found. Apparently, she used to also be on a TV show called The Bad Girls Club and was popping bottles and smoking hookah less than a week before she started begging.
Oh, yeah.
Basically, you got fired from your show.
Yep.
And you blew all your cash.
Yep. And racking up credit card bills
now,
probably.
Trying to live that lifestyle.
And now she's in, as they say, arrears.
Let's be honest. We, jokingly, not jokingly, were trying to get Mark to Pasadena, and we were going to do a GoFundMe page, legal at 92.9 at CBS, and Entercom went, we don't do that. We weren't really going to beg for the money because it's a bad look for all of us, but it was funny for the show.
Right.
Would you ever donate to somebody like this that's dealing with something like that?
No.
Me neither.
Because I've been in dire straits before. You know
Absolutely.
What I did? I went and got a second job.
Yeah. Yeah, there were times I didn't sleep.
Look, if I were a super baller and somebody had a hardship, like Shaquille O'Neal, for example, the George Mikan passed away. Shaq reached out to the Mikan family and said, I want to pay for all the funeral proceedings, the coffin, the burial, the whole thing.
See, that's a little different because they're not out there – you know,
they're not asking for
they're
rent.
Not panhandling
good
for
point.
Money. They didn't ask anybody to come pay the funeral.
Very good
bills.
Point.
That
but,
was an offer because the man was a legend.
Yeah.
And that was just Shaq showing his respect.
Yeah, no doubt about it. But I'm just saying, if I were to take on a situation like this, it would be a of the hardship variety,
right.
Not of, yo, I'm out of a job, but I'm still getting it in. Like, I still got my job, but yo, I need money, and I'm not going to give up anything. Anyway. What else you got?
Now, I know yesterday we talked about Mike Tyson. He's got his new his marijuana plantation farm out in California.
Yeah.
He's got 40 acres or something of that
he's
nature.
He's going to kill it. Yeah, 60,
well, apparently,
I believe so.
Apparently, at the Super Bowl, Ricky Williams says, come smoke with me.
Oh.
Apparently, if you want to get a seat higher than the nosebleeds for the Super Bowl, now's your chance. Ricky Williams is hosting his very own weed party for the big game.
Where at? Minnesota?
Yeah. The ex-NFL superstar turned ganja advocate is hosting the highly anticipated event in February. And instead of making it a BYOB party, Ricky's inviting guests to BYOW, bring your own weed.
So, time out. He's always been a weed advocate.
Absolutely.
Okay?
Yeah.
It just wasn't as accepted back when he was playing ball.
But now he's weed over the NFL.
But now he's a ganja advocate instead of just a weed smoker.
Ganja. What are we, Rastafarians here?
I'm just reading the article.
I love it.
Snoop Dogg is a ganja expert
yes,
as
he
well.
Is.
I'm making no reference to a
now, this will not be in Minnesota. This will be in Hollywood. And the party is TBA.
No, the party is going to be on fire. That's what the party is going to be.
Well, and it's legal in L.A. In
That's
Minnesota,
right.
He might get arrested.
I'll look that up. I don't think weed is legal up in Minnesota.
Yeah, I was going to say, I don't think so.
I'm going to look
it's
that up,
It's your home
though.
State. You should be aware of these things.
I should know this.
All right, so apparently Baker Mayfield has dropped his college girlfriend and is now dating an L.A. IG model.
Who dropped his girlfriend?
Baker Mayfield.
Where? Is this in Minnesota?
No.
You're so distracting him right now.
Sorry, I distracted.
Okay, Johnny Manziel, continue.
No, Baker Mayfield.
My bad. Baker Mayfield, continue.
He has dropped his college girlfriend and is now dating an L.A. IG model by the name of Emily Wilkinson.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
They were seen at the Clippers game together.
Last night or whatever?
Yeah, it was last night or the night before, something like
Emily
that.
Emily Wilkinson.
Apparently, this comes from The Spun. It says, I'm not going to say he upgraded because it's not about all looks, but let's just say Ezekiel Elliott would approve.
Okay.
So she's a white girl.
Yes.
Well, here's also what happens. You win a Heisman Trophy, and it sucks because you don't know what the relationship was with his girl back in college. he feels the fame and fortune is probably going to get to his head, and he just wanted a different piece of candy on his arm. It stinks for the girl back in college who was with him when he was eating ramen noodles and he was walking on somewhere.
Well, let's be honest. He was never eating ramen noodles. Of course, they have $100 handshakes down there in Boomer Soonerville.
Well, he might have been eating ramen noodles when he's a walk-on.
Yeah, he was a walk-on.
Now, later in his career.
So, John is definitely not going to give dime piece status to Emily Wilkinson. Neither am I, by the way, but she's hot.
Yeah.
They're real, so I'm a fan of that. Now, what was the search I was doing before? Oh, yeah, Minnesota weed legal. I got to look that up, too. I got to see if that's see if that's what's going on.
We have completely lost Rick for the rest of the show. Blonde and searches.
So, as we all know, Rich Rodriguez was let go by Arizona.
Yes.
Due to the fact he had an extramarital affair, and he's been accused by his assistant of sexual misconduct. Mm-hmm. Well, apparently, he has even bigger cojones than that, because back in 2015, he had his wife and mistress on the sideline at the same time.
Are you kidding me?
So, he's turned into Rush Probst, basically. Remember the coach from,
yes.
And I forget where he coaches now, but he coached over in
he
Alabama.
He coached in Georgia somewhere now?
He's down in South Georgia somewhere. They may have won a state title again. And somebody on the Solomon Brothers Diamond text line will tell me. But he was the guy. What was the MTV show, the high school show?
It was where's SC Media?
Yeah, Hoover. Yeah, he coached in Hoover. He was a guy that had it. He'd have his wife on the sideline, his pregnant mistress in the crowd. That took some cojones. So Rich Rod was doing that at Arizona.
Yeah, it's 2015, November 6th. It was the USC game in Tucson.
Okay.
And eventually, his assistant basically had to stand between the mistress and the wife.
Did they know that each other was the mistress and the wife?
It doesn't say in the article, but you have to have a feeling that, you know, the wife is not stupid.
Hmm. So marijuana is not legal in Minnesota.
Yeah, I didn't think
shocking.
So
that is what's up there. And I wanted to make one more comment on the lady who Baker Mayfield left on the campus of Oklahoma for this hottie, Emily Wilkinson. It was a nice run. That little college co-ed.
Okay.
I'm just saying, it was a nice run.
Okay. Coach is Colquitt County. I knew somebody would
say
Texas.
There you go. All right. Research material today comes from Gary in Atlanta. Right. Her name is Essence Tatiana.
Of course it is. Essence Tatiana.
There you go.
All right.
Thanks to Gary for listening, sending in his choice.
Hey, is this the biggest event in Atlanta sports history? We're going to debate next. Is Georgia in the national title game at home? The one. We talk about that next on Sports Radio 92.9, The Game.
Jake continues to grow as a player. He puts us in the right play. He makes good decisions with the ball. He protects the ball. So he does a lot of good things, and I'm really proud of his growth. The kid's got a bright future, and as long as you have a good run game and our offensive line creates running lanes for 1 and 27, it's hard to play defense against these two guys.
As well as, it's not about the future, it's about winning this game on Monday night against the Tide. It'll be Georgia and Alabama about 8 o'clock on Monday night. We're going to be at Stats, John and I, on Monday, and Dukes and Bell will be there as well from 2 to 6. And then they got a special college football game time from 2 to 8 at Stats. It's all going down at Stats. We'll be there hanging out. And we're at the College Football Hall of Fame today and tomorrow. John will be off. Randy McMichael will be in. And we're asking the question, and we definitely want to have a conversation with one of the great fan bases and sporting fan bases in all of America, you, Atlanta, 404-741-0929. Is the national championship game on Monday night the biggest sports event in Atlanta history? Let's talk.
It's very interesting when you phrase it that way, because when I say in Atlanta history, I take into consideration the Super Bowl a year ago, although it didn't happen in this city, what it meant. You know, I think back to a year ago, being on the bus with the Falcons, leaving Flowery Branch, driving down I-85, which is about 30 miles to get to downtown Atlanta, and people hanging off of, like, literally hanging off the overpasses, waving their Falcon flags. We get down to Atlantic Station. It's standing room only for the entire couple of blocks of Atlantic Station. It took us like 30 minutes to navigate buses through there. People are banging on the buses and following us down to the airport. And, you know, we talked to how many different fans last year that literally drove from Atlanta to Houston, not to go to the game, just to say, dude, I was here for the Super Bowl. I don't know that anything will touch that. And I know this national championship, Georgia, for the entire state, especially being it taking the place here in Atlanta, is going to be right there. But last year's Super Bowl run was something special.
It was amazing. But as you said, it's an Atlanta sporting event. It happened in Houston. So, and we can take this wherever we want. I'm not trying to be rigid about this. I have come up with, John, my top five I think, sporting moments in Atlanta history.
Okay.
And I'll just say quickly that I don't believe that this national championship game is the number one sporting event in Atlanta sports history. I think number one is the 1992. I could be talked out of this, by the way. I'm not all firm and dug in on this list. I think number one is the 1992 Super Bowl. You just built the Georgia Dome. It's the first time that the Super Bowl or a huge event like that ever came to the city of Atlanta. So to me, that's number one. Number two, the other Super Bowl, 1999. What is bigger in sports than the Super Bowl? Nothing. Number three, when the Final Four was here, and I put that above the national championship game, John, because the March Madness, the NCAA tournament, is just a bigger deal than the college football.
I don't know about that.
It is. Nationwide, the March Madness tournament is a bigger deal than the Final Four of football. Nationally. It definitely is.
The only reason I'll sort of agree with you is it's been around longer. People care about football, though, more. The difference, though, is the national title, the Final Four, is a two-day event. It's a Saturday and a Monday, and it kind of leads, you know, you have the couple of day lead-in. But, man, this city has been a buzz this week.
Oh, yeah. No, there's no question. They're all huge events, okay? But we're splitting hairs here. What would I rather watch? The college football Final Four or the NCAA men's basketball Final Four? I'd much rather watch college football than college basketball. But that's me, okay? The Mike Francesas, a guy hosting a show in Minneapolis, a guy hosting a show in places at Ohio, okay, or in Cleveland. They don't really care about this game.
They kind of do,
but they kind of don't. I'm telling you, I've spent 6 years in the Northeast. Listen to sports talk radio. College football is barely on their radar. Didn't Colin Cowherd prove that with his stupid take about Georgia not belonging in the national championship game? He admitted to all of us that he rarely, if not ever, watches college football.
Well, I think he rarely, if ever, watches anything. He just comes up with some fly-on-the-wall crap to get everybody to scream and yell, and it's the ESPN and now the Fox policy. That's how it's kind of been, and that's how people like him and Skip Bayless and other guys have been successful. I disagree. And the other part of that is, you know, the college football playoff itself, what is this, the fifth year? Fourth year. Okay, of the actual playoff been in existence. The other difference with that is you're talking about two different weekends in three different cities. If the playoffs were all in Atlanta, the Final Four and the championship game were here for 1 week, it'd be bigger than the Super Bowl. I mean, you'd have four fan bases all descending on a place in two games or three games, whatever it may be. It'll never obviously happen because of the logistics of football.
Right.
But it's bigger than college. College basketball, unfortunately, is a dying sport.
Well, but it's not in terms of ratings, money spent on it, the advertising, it's not. And in terms of national interest and even people that can't name a single player in college basketball will fill out brackets.
Sure.
Okay, it's bigger than college football. Nationally, not here in the South. I know it's hard for people to hear. We can agree to disagree on that, but I am dug in on that opinion. So let me complete my top five. Biggest sporting events in Atlanta history, and I don't think it's the national championship game. Number one, 92 Super Bowl. Number two, 99 Super Bowl. Number three, when the Final Four was just here, and I believe it was Louisville beating Michigan in the final game, if memory serves. Number four, Monday's national championship game. And number five, with a little bit of hate and bias, the 96 Olympics. I'm just not an Olympics guy. The Olympics bore me. I don't watch nonstop coverage of the Olympics. So I've got the Olympics in the top five, but because a lot of people, John, would say the 96 Olympics is the biggest sports moment in Atlanta history.
Well, I think it's changed the entire direction of what the city is. We've become a mega city. 1996 Atlanta, and I moved here in 98, and I've seen growth in 20 years from what Atlanta was to what Atlanta is today. I remember when Alpharetta, up by where Paul lives, it was the end of the road in 400. You know, you kind of went up there and you go, what the hell is up? Why am I driving this far up here? Where I'm at in Lawrenceville was kind of an afterthought. Nobody lived there. Beaufort is its own city now, and it's a monster city if you ever try to drive to the Mall of Georgia up there. Those were just outposts. Those were just a gas station, and you kept driving. The Olympics fueled all of that. I'm going to add a couple of more that weren't on there. Game 6 of the 95 World Series.
That's a good one.
To finally win a championship in baseball. The 91, you know, winning to get to the World Series. 92, Sid Slides. You know, that's another one. It's a huge sporting event in the city of Atlanta. How about WrestleMania? And I know you're not a wrestling guy at all, there were 80,000 people at the Georgia Dome, most of them looking crazy like Mark and I, with championship belts. Grant McCauley, I think, had face paint on and a reverse mohawk.
I hear you. I'm not a WrestleMania guy. And so as we try to define this list a little bit, we would all agree that there's no bigger sporting event than the Super Bowl, right?
No, I agree.
So I think that the two Super Bowls here in Atlanta, even though they were seemingly a million years ago at 92 and 99, that's why I think those are the two biggest events that have been here. The Super Bowl is that's just the pinnacle.
It was, and the Super Bowl, I believe, was the end of the 93 season going to 94. I may have said it because 92 was in California, wasn't it, when it was Bills. So it was a rematch of Bills-Cowboys.
What I do know is that Cowboys beat Bills 30-13. In that Super Bowl at
And Thurman Thomas still can't find his helmet.
Was that the one against Washington?
I don't know. The Bills loses.
I want to say Thurman forgot his helmet in Minneapolis, John.
Maybe you're right. Yeah, you may be right.
Against
there.
The Redskins. Again, fuzzy. Too many parties. But I that's my recollection of that.
Guy texted in and said, John, did you really say that college basketball is a dying sport? Yeah, it is. As opposed to where it was in the 80s and 90s, the one and done is killing college basketball. How many guys right now have tuned in outside of Deshaun Tate, who we love in college, and tuned in and watched loads of college hoops during the football season?
I mean, I have no idea. My sporting calendar does not include college basketball, unfortunately, until after the Super Bowl. It just doesn't. Now, I did DVR because of Deshaun Tate, and he's been just hard selling me on Trae Young of Oklahoma. And I got to see this guy. People are raving about him. He's doing historic, record-breaking stuff. I did DVR last night's game between Oklahoma and Oklahoma State, so I will get my eye on Trae Young. And he had another spectacular game. I know the stat line was off the charts.
Yeah, this is my time to really dive in. And I've given it a cursory glance. I'll watch when Michigan State plays. They're really good. I've had to look at Marvin Bagley because he's really good. To me, the sport is nowhere where it once was, because Big Monday used to be must-watch TV. 7 o'clock, the Big East game. 9 o'clock, it was normally the Big 8 or the Big 12 game.
Yep.
And then at midnight, it was the West Coast Conference. You wanted to watch Loyola Marymount or UNLV play out of the old Big West.
Here's the thing, dude. I'm going to agree and disagree with you. In terms of level of play, it is dying. Mm-hmm. Or at least it's a real cut-rate version of what it used to be. But in terms of the networks,
oh, sure,
sponsors, corporations, and like I said, just widespread casual fans getting involved in it, it's definitely not dying. And when you turn on ESPN right now, what do you see? In the 7 o'clock to basically midnight window.
It's hoops.
It's college basketball. And so every single night, ESPN has like a doubleheader of college hoops. So,
I guess for me, it's just being a child of the 80s and 90s where it seemed like it was more important. There may be
it
more,
was.
There's more programming, no doubt. Part of it, you've got 18 ESPN channels, and nobody complains about that. But it seemed like they built up the importance. Now you might get that. This month, you'll start to get it on Saturdays. They have game day and whatnot. You start to get it on, Sundays because they'll have big games on CBS. But it's not till now. Before, it was like as soon as college hoops rolled out, it was boom, we're ready for it.
So what? I want to go to Mark Owens here in the Kia Studios. What is your top Atlanta sports moment? Well, I shouldn't phrase it that way. Well, let's phrase it like this. Is the national championship game on Monday the biggest sporting event in Atlanta history, or do you have another one?
No, it's not. It's the Olympics. Hand down, worldwide coverage. Being here in that town when I was in fifth grade when they announced it, the city lost its mind. You got ticker tape parades. The entire city, Centennial Olympic Park, was a party the entire couple of weeks of the Olympics. There were buses in every single county. I was in high school when the Olympics were here in 96. We'd jump on a bus at Cumberland Mall, take the bus down and drop us off at Centennial Olympic Park, and you just party all night long. And you get on the bus and go back home. They don't do that now. It was such a huge event. Now, unfortunately, the bombing put kind of a little bit of an ugly face on it, but that's what a lot of people remember. But as far as a sporting event goes, it does not get bigger than the Olympics in your city.
Okay, and we're going to get a lot of that, I have a feeling. So, John, what do you think is the biggest sporting event ever to happen in Atlanta?
I as much as it's tough for me, it is the Olympics. And I'm not. I remember watching that Olympics. I wasn't living here yet. I was actually out for summer break from college. I was back in South Florida. But watching it was like, dude, I want to move to Atlanta. That place looks awesome. We had heard about Freaknik and all of that stuff that had gone on here and how much fun that was. And you heard about the party scene. But the Olympics changed the direction of what the city is. I don't know that Atlanta would be the – trying to think, the national phenomenon it is now, or as fast of a growing city now, if they don't get the 96 Olympics.
You're very true, my friend, very true. And look, I'm not mad putting the Olympics number one. I'm just kind of hating on the Olympics. It's not my thing, so I've got it at five. Certainly not vehemently disagreeing with you guys. So, Emma, let's punch up Mike right here as the Midday Show with Rick and John comes to you live from the College Football Hall of Fame here in downtown Atlanta. Hey, Mike, let's go to Anu here. What is the biggest sporting event in Atlanta history? Is it the national championship game Monday night?
Hey, how you doing, Rick? Happy New Year.
Happy New Year, bro.
Okay, I'm just going to say this how it is. Number five, 96 Olympics. I was living in D.C. at the time as a kid, and that was the greatest thing I ever watched. For being a first generation myself, it was the whole world watching. And, you know, I kid you not, if Arthur Blank can do the deal, we can bring that World Cup down here to Atlanta.
Oh, yeah. If he gets the World Cup here, all bets are off.
Based on the success of Atlanta United, I would say that's likely, right?
I think so.
And if Atlanta United had 10, 15,000 people at the Benz and attendance was, you know, not that great, then I would say unlikely, right? But, I mean, Atlanta obviously head over heels supported soccer. I would think that would grab the attention of the people making the decision on the World Cup.
Totally agree. And it's going to be one of those scenarios that once that comes here, you'll see something different because that is a global phenomenon, much like the Olympics. I would have this national title game number two above the Super Bowls only because it ties the local team in to the national championship. You're talking about an entire state. And, Mark, would I be generous in saying that 80% of this state are Georgia fans, or is that too high?
It might be a little high, but I think it's safe to say between about 70 to 75%.
Okay. So 70 to 75% of your state supports one school. The championship game is in your state, and that school is playing in it. And, oh, by the way, you're playing the preeminent power in college football over the last decade in Alabama. I don't know how you get much bigger than this. Now, Falcons at home a year from now in the Super Bowl, it'll blow all of it out of the water.
And we have so many unbelievable sporting events coming here. But, John, you're making good points. Let's get more. Let's go to Mike here on Sports Radio 92.9, the game, the Midday Show with Rick and John. Mike, how you doing, dude?
Hey, I'm doing good. Happy New Year, guys. I just got to agree with the last caller and Mark as well. But you got to look at it twofold. I'm born and raised here. I went to Banneker High School. Hands down, I went to Georgia. I'm a Georgia grad. Hands down, from an emotional standpoint, this national championship would be like the greatest thing ever to happen to us as a local fan base. But from a financial standpoint, I mean, we went from 2 million people to 5 million people in a matter of 3 weeks that stayed here because of the Olympics. You know what I'm saying? Like, MARTA wasn't a problem until the Olympics happened. And so hands down, from a financial, like, I had the greatest summer job amongst all my friends working at Coca-Cola during my summer break vacation because of the Olympics. It was, I mean, hands down, you got to look at it twofold. Financial standpoint, the Olympics, but emotionally, this national championship is going to make everybody happy.
Yeah, the perimeter, actually, 285 was the outskirts of Atlanta then. Jimmy Carter was like as far as anybody would go north up into Gwinnett back then.
Couldn't Jimmy Carter get more love? Couldn't he get like a city in downtown, you know, like a relevant road? And now, of course, Jimmy Carter Boulevard is one of the busiest roads in Atlanta.
Can he get a road that doesn't change names 11 times? It goes from Jimmy Carter to Holcomb Bridge to 92. I forgot what it is going back down the east side.
That totally trips me out. And the fact that in our hood, Scenic Highway, it's Centerville Highway,
and it's 124.
Scenic Highway, it's 124. It's like, just pick a damn name and stick with it.
My poor wife gets so confused with all that. I'm like, go down to 124 and make a right. You mean Scenic Highway? No, it's 124. She gets so mad. Just give me the stupid name of the road. All right, go to 120. Where's 120? Well, it's over there. It's a time. Hey, we continue that conversation next. Is this the biggest sporting event in Atlanta sports history? We're live at the College Football Hall of Fame. You should as well. Come on down. Hang out with us. We're here till 2.
His love of the Miami Hurricanes is disturbingly unnatural. No, really. Who names their kid after a football program?
You people don't understand.
Back to Rick and John on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
Very emotional game, which concerns me, and talk to the players immediately afterwards about not burning any more energy or emotion on that game and moving on. Alabama had a little more sound victory, so they probably didn't burn quite as much emotion, although I know it was emotional to beat a team that beat them last year. And the focus moving forward will be on preparing for Alabama.
Work it, make it, do it, makes us harder, better, faster, stronger. Work it,
Kirby Smart's my guy, but again, he's missing me with that soundbite, man. It should just be about Alabama winning a national championship. It should not be about logistics and this and that and complaints and circumstances. My God, Kirby, you are where you are. You've been chopping wood all year. Why are you complaining and trying to create built-in excuses? I'm not feeling those soundbites at all. John, there's honesty, and we all love honesty. We want guys to grip it and rip it. And then there's telling people a little bit too much. To me, like, if you have to look at the real gangster coaches, okay? They tell you virtually nothing. Mm-hmm. Greg Popovich, Bill Belichick, Parcells back in his day, Nick Saban. These guys, they don't tell you anything. They move their lips and words come out, and they don't tell you anything. Like, Kirby is, pulling the veil back and bringing us all in and, I don't know, Kirby. This should be about execution and, you know, desire and hunger. This should not be about looking back and did we emotionally empty the tank against Oklahoma? Are you with me or am I barking up the wrong tree?
No, I get what you're saying with that. And you know what? I don't like the fact that he even brought up about we had to drain some. Who cares? You're in a national title
game.
Give
me a break, dude.
Anybody right now, and there's not a player out there for Georgia that's going to come in and go, man, I'm dragging today. You know, I'm tired from Oklahoma. No, bro, you got a chance to win a championship for the first time in 37 years for this program. You know another guy who runs his mouth and doesn't really say anything? Skip Bayless.
For sure.
And I got to bring this up only because it's our guy and he'll be filling in tomorrow, Randy McMichael. Skip Bayless tweets, I will never recover from the fact that Oklahoma blew a 31-14 lead to a running team with a freshman quarterback. And he yelled it because he had to put it in all capital letters. So our boy Randy Mack, who has always said, he doesn't get as emotionally invested as I do or as Mark does or as Jeff Benedict does in college football. He sends back, well, deal with it, suck boy, and S is not the word that he used. He said, go Dogs. And he got like 2,000 retweets out of this. Afterwards, Randy goes, I apologize for my foul language, but I'm so sick of people talking about Oklahoma lost the game. No, the Dogs took it from him. Sorry, not sorry. So he went off on Skip Bayless. That's a fight that Skip Bayless would run. He would lock himself into one of these rooms right here and beg for mercy if Randy Mack ever came after him.
You do you, Randy Mack. We love you, man. He's going to be with us tomorrow at Stats. We're here at the College Football.
You'll be here tomorrow. Don't go
my
to
bad,
Stats.
My bad. We'll be here at the College Football Hall of Fame tomorrow, and then it's Stats on Monday. And we're going to go back to the phone lines here and bring you all in. Is this the biggest sports event in Atlanta history? I understand people that say that it is. I think that the Super Bowls that have been in this city are the two biggest sporting events in Atlanta history. John says Olympics. MO says Olympics. I want to bring PB in here in a second and get his take as we turn up his mic. But we have a big development happening here in Atlanta. Atlanta police are working with the U.S. Secret Service ahead of Donald Trump visiting Atlanta for Monday's college football championship game. In a statement emailed to ESPN, Atlanta police spokesman Carlos Campo said, we're aware of his visit. Check this out. Atlanta's mayor, and by the way, this is a Mike Conti, John Fricke special. Like, they love the news and press conferences and all that kind of stuff. So Atlanta's mayor, Kasim Reed, the police chief, and representatives from the FBI and other state and federal agencies, yep, a bunch of high-level people, will be at a 1 p.m. Thursday news briefing on emergency plans surrounding the game between Georgia and Alabama. The White House has not made an official announcement on Trump being here in Atlanta for the game. So I don't know when he's coming or what, but the alarms have been sounded for the decision makers in Atlanta to figure this out.
Let's go back to the phones because that's all I have to say about that at 404-741-0929. Hey, Jeff Benedict actually sounded off something really, really good one here. Jeff said, hey,
that was a shot.
I know I could be late, but how about MJ's last game in Atlanta in 98? They had to move the game to the Dome to accommodate requests.
That's Jeff Benedict?
Yeah.
That's a really good call. I got one more for you. And this is not the greatest sporting event in Atlanta history, but the 2003 NBA All-Star game.
Weekend was awesome.
It was an amazing game. I believe it was Michael Jordan's final All-Star game. You had Kobe and him going at it. Kevin Garnett, my second favorite player of all time, won MVP of that game. Went to single or double overtime or something like that. But that was a big, big deal in Atlanta.
That was one of the most awesome weekends in the history of this city. other than the planning for the logistics of driving around this city were completely blanked. Because they started blocking off all these roads. They go, no, we're going to just funnel everybody here. How about let everybody just drive where they drive? They were, you know, Peachtree was blocked off and Lenox Road. It was so huge, the Lenox Mall was closed due to overcrowding. You know how huge the Lenox Mall is, Paul. They literally had to shut the doors and go, nobody else can come in here. That's what NBA All-Star Weekend was. You would have to leave to go out at about 7 because it would take you 2.5 to 3 hours to get where you were trying to get to.
Wow.
That's when Buckhead was Buckhead. Oh, it was awesome. The young days.
The good old days, man.
Boy, John just had a moment here at the College Football Hall of Fame.
Dude, when Buckhead was Buckhead, you didn't get to live here when Buckhead was Buckhead.
I did not. Charity did, and she tells stories about how mad Buckhead was back. Oh. She'd like bop in from Birmingham, spend the
weekend.
You're
talking, what, 50 clubs and bars, 60 clubs and bars in like a 3-block radius? So, okay, if you went into World Bar, which just happened to be my spot, you go in there and it's all hip-hop and you're having a great time, but you're interested in some of the girls that were at the EDM spot or the pop bar, everything let out at 3 a.m. and just boom, you had a massive humanity in Buckhead. A lot of shots were shot at that time. Let's just say that.
All right. So let's
great times. We had fun.
Let's take it to the streets, man. We are asking you at 404-741-0929, is the national championship game Monday night the biggest sports event in Atlanta history? And M.O. back in our Kia studios. Let's punch up Terrence. Terrence, you're on with Rick and John here. How you doing today? And is the national championship game the biggest sports event in Atlanta history?
I do not think it is, unless the Dogs win. I think that if UGA wins, I think that puts it up there. But if they lose, then you look back at it, to me anyways, and you look back at the national championship that we hosted in Georgia that was lost by the in-state team. What I like to look at as the biggest event, sports event in Atlanta is the Braves winning the World Series because it's the only championship that the state has. So that's what I would look at.
Hey, thank you for the call. I got to make a quick correction, and thank you, John Michaels, for heading me up to this. The great Kasim Reed, no longer the mayor of Atlanta. It is Keisha Lance Bottoms right now. So Keisha, or should I say Miss Bottoms, I would respectfully apologize for making that mistake. But Keisha is now the mayor of Atlanta.
Well, I appreciate that call. Right? I had mentioned Game 6 of the World Series, and yeah, the caller's right. If Georgia so happens to lose this game, suddenly all the love and luster of the national we finished in second place. Now, if they win it, again, there's going to be 485,000 people that will tell you that they were at Mercedes-Benz Stadium that night.
What do you think Kasim Reed's doing right now? Is he just chilling on a mountain of money? Like, do mayors make that much cash?
I don't think
they
make that much. They make a nice amount. I don't think they make enough. You know, he's not sitting back on like golden tables or anything like that.
Well, we certainly wish him well. He served Atlanta at a very, very high level.
Eric's saying that Kasim said he's going to Mr. Reed's going to run for president.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
I'd vote for him. Met him a couple times. Kasim, really nice guy.
Do your thing, man. Do your thing. He has done phenomenal
stuff
for
Atlanta.
I want
to be your Secretary of Finance.
There you go. Could I be his VP of Talent Evaluation?
Yeah, I'm sure he can put you in there.
And by the way, that's all-encompassing, talent evaluation. All right, is the national championship game the biggest sports event in Atlanta history? M.O., let's punch up Brenda here if she's still on the line. Brenda, you're on with Rick and John. We're at the College Football Hall of Fame. How you doing today?
Hi, how you doing? I think that it's not so much because for the Georgia fans and for college football fans, it will be exciting, but the Olympics was for the world. So I don't think anything that we had come in since then is going to top that. The Olympics was big time. I worked at the airport during that time, and it was just phenomenal. So and then also economically, people going to drive in from Tuscaloosa and go home, and people going to drive in from around Georgia and go home. So you won't get all the revenue that you got from the Olympics, but by no means. So.
It's a great call, Brenda, and the revenue aspect. I'm sure the hotels, while they love the fact that there's going to be Georgia fans that are going to migrate down here and stay a night, it's different than, and trust me, we'd rather Georgia be here than Oklahoma. Oklahoma fans are going to fly their butts in. They're going to stay a couple of days. They're going to rent a car. They're going to be eating at restaurants. There's Georgia fans that are going, all right, it's $2,000 for me to get in. I'm going to be at home cooking whatever's in the refrigerator. So it may not be the same economic boom. So that's obviously a huge call. That's where next year's Super Bowl might be the only thing that can pass the Olympics, because that is a world event. People will fly in from China. We saw them at opening night this year. You know, Chinese reporters trying to ask, you know, Tyson Jackson a question, which was always entertaining.
So, John, I'm tripping out on do you remember when Mark Owens played? He had the Latin call of Sony Michel's touchdown.
Yeah.
And then he had the Russian call.
Uh-huh.
I don't understand. And this just kind of blows my mind that people in Mongolia, people in Russia, people in Australia, people in Tokyo care about the college football national championship game. I'm just saying, it's hard for me to believe that people in Asia give a darn about the college football national championship, that people in Moscow just have to watch Georgia and Alabama.
Not the same way that they have to watch the Super Bowl or they have to watch the Olympics.
So I'm just saying, like really? Like, Russia is sending over some radio station or entity in Russia is sending people to America to broadcast the national or a semifinal game back to Russia. It just, I'm not hating on it. It just blows my mind. Well, I didn't think that happened.
What they're really doing is spying on the Ball family to see what the typical American college athlete is about and wondering, do they want them in Lithuania anymore?
So what is going on with LiAngelo and with LaMelo?
They're in Lithuania toiling.
And
we were in Bratislava.
Have they made a basket yet?
No, they have not scored yet.
They landed yesterday. It was a big mob scene.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
Like, people excited to have them there and the whole thing?
Yeah, because, I mean, the ticket prices for that team have gone way up.
Have the Kardashians tried to plug into the Ball ascension yet?
I don't believe they need to.
They don't need to, but it seems like whatever's hot, they want a part of it, right?
I don't know, because Tristan Thompson was never really hot. He did get a nice contract, but, you know, in Kardashian world, $90 million is a Tuesday. We come back, we read between the lines with the one and only Mark Owens. So ticket price is still dropping, Mark.
It's going to happen. It's going to happen. By God, I'm going to get my happy butt there on Monday. But coming up next, Tim Brando was on with Dukes and Bell yesterday. And while SEC versus SEC, it may be cool on paper, but he says you won't see it ever again. We'll explain next in Read Between the Lines, Sports Radio, 92.9 The Game.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.